You know, I proposed doing a session here at the SharePoint Connections a few months ago, early in the summer. You know, we have a long lead time at what sessions you want to do. And I said, well, phone's going to be big. It's going to be around the time that they're going to be launching the phone. Let's do something with SharePoint and the phone. How hard can it be? Little did I know, from that time, 3 months ago, I've been working nearly nonstop trying to get everything to work. Even the most simple example. And as the weeks went on and it got closer and closer and the deadlines came and went to when I should have everything turned in, I had flight arrangements and I'm getting ready to leave on the plane. Still at this point that week, I still haven't had anything working. And so I'm thinking, this is really hard. What am I going to do? And so, you know, I paced around my office and yelled and screamed a lot and banged my head on the wall and yelled at my manager and, you know, on and on. Then finally, the morning that I was supposed to leave, I woke up and kind of had a, well, how about if I try this moment? And luckily enough, it worked. So I was able to get on the plane, come here, knowing that I actually had something working. Now, this is actually, you know, a big achievement, and when you see it, it's fairly obvious the solution. But getting to this point hasn't been done before, so you guys are actually seeing it for the first time. And in fact, I have lots of people in the internal of Microsoft pinging me for the solution because everybody's been kind of waiting for somebody to figure this out. But you guys are actually the first to see it, even before some of the people on the product team. So hopefully this will be valuable to you. So my name is Paul Stubbs. I'm a technical evangelist for SharePoint in Redmond. We do productivity on my team, so we have UC, CRM, Office, and SharePoint, in which I do SharePoint. And so, you know, really what we're going to talk about today is a couple things first. So first, we're going to talk about mobile web pages in SharePoint. How many people have used the mobile pages in SharePoint? One, two. It's not super common, and you'll see why once we get going. But then we'll talk about how to do mobile web parts and how to build web parts so that they're available for mobile users and mobile browsers. And then finally, the thing that we're all here to see, which is Windows Phone 7 applications, so native Phone 7 applications talking to SharePoint and working with SharePoint data. And so that's what we'll finish up with. So mobile pages are really this notion that if you come to SharePoint with a particular browser type, that SharePoint will automatically redirect you to a mobile page. Now in the past, in SharePoint 2007, it was a slash M page at the end. Now what they have, that's sort of deprecated and actually out of the box, it's not turned on, so you would have to go turn that on yourself if you want that backward compatibility. But now what they have is you put a question mark mobile equals one at the end of a page to force that page into a mobile view so that you can see what that looks like in a mobile view or a down-level experience, or if you're on limited bandwidth, you can display the mobile view. But by default, what happens is that when you go to mobile view, all that SharePoint really shows you is a list of the lists and libraries. So if you have web parts and other things on the page, those won't be rendered in the mobile view. And that's what we'll get to in the second part, which is how do I create web parts that do get rendered into the mobile view is the point. There are a few exceptions, like the wiki pages will render in the output. And there are a few others that ship in the box that have the capability to render themselves in the mobile view. But in general, if you think about developing web parts for your sites, remember that those won't by default render if someone comes with a mobile browser. So no web parts. So imagine you have a website that looks like this. And this is actually the WSSdemo.com site. If I were to view this in a mobile browser, here is the view that I would see. This is how this page gets rendered in the mobile browser. It's in essence just the list of the lists and libraries that you see in SharePoint. It's interesting if that's all you have access to, you know, it'll get you by, right? But it really doesn't provide the full fidelity of SharePoint. But the actuality is, the reality of the scenario is that this isn't even what happens by default. What happens by default in most of the mobile browsers these days, they're able to render full fidelity. So this is actually the view you would get if you go to the website with the phone. Similar to if you had your iPhone or whatever. You would get a full fidelity page because SharePoint doesn't recognize that device as one that needs to be rendered as a mobile output. But you can provide users the option to toggle back and forth on your site just using the mobile equals one switch. And so, which case, someone comes with a browser like this, but maybe they're on low bandwidth because they're on a mobile device. They want the down-level experience so they can just quickly get their work done, go add a couple records to a library or do something. And then you want to provide that down-level experience to them. But in general, most of the phones and devices and smart devices will actually just render the site like a normal browser would. And then you have the pinch and zoom, and you can do what you do, you know, normally browsing a web. So let's take a quick look here at an example of what this looks like. So here I have a website. This is my intranet site, the out-of-the-box experience. Hopefully it'll warm up here. So here's the sort of the out-of-the-box experience that you get. I have an image over on the right, and I have some wiki text here. Now, if I come here and do mobile equals one, if I can spell it right, SharePoint will render the down-level experience or the mobile experience to your page. And so you can see this would be what you would see on the phone in this scenario. So if you imagine I have a browser that's this big. And this allows you as a developer to test these out on a normal page. And so I can see, you know, I can see the getting started list, and I can view all the pages from here. We can view other information. So you get some information from the wikis, but in general, the web parts don't show up, right? So for example, if we come back to this site here, we can see other information about the different views from each of the pages that are being rendered. We could filter this if we wanted to. Let's come back to our phone site. But even here, if I render the calendar, what you'll see is that you get just a very simple list kind of view of your calendar. So very, very primitive rendering of some of the core types that are in SharePoint. So it becomes very, very interesting to deal with these different types. One of the things that you can do here is, here I have a web part page. Actually, let me show you one other page first. So if we come here and create a new page, I'm going to sign in first. Here I have dual authentication turned on, and we'll talk about this later. So we can log in either using Windows Authentication or Formspace. So if I add a new page here to my wiki, and then I insert a web part into this page, let's find something interesting. I don't want to display that. So if I put a Silverlight web part into this page, cancel that. I don't have the one ready here. What I want to show you so this here is the organization browser. It's going to take a second to come up, but it's a Silverlight application. Now what happens in this application, and I don't have users on this site, so it's not rendering a lot of users, but what I want to show you is... that when I render this page, that whole Silverlight control just goes away. Right? You don't even see it. You have no idea that it was even there on the page. This page just becomes basically an empty page. But if we go back to... go back up one site here. We can see that in our site pages, I have this web part here, and when I render this as, you see that that web part actually renders. And then we can actually drill down in to see the content from that web part, right? So the way that this works is that SharePoint has this concept of mobile web part adapters. And the mobile web part adapters are really a way for you to plug in an alternate rendering of the web part. And so you totally define what that rendering is. So for example, if I'm rendering a calendar, I can then, on a mobile device, render a list of dates. If I'm rendering a Silverlight application of the organization browser, when I render in the mobile device, I could render just a simple list of the people in my organization. But you decide what the alternate version is and what the lightweight version is for your device. And you could go so far as to... maybe even know that you're on a Windows Phone 7 device or an iPhone-type device or Android that can handle richer displays, and you can display content to them that may be restricted not by what's visually appealing, but by the content that you download for them. So the way that this happens is that you create the web part adapter, and then you have to put in a mapping inside of the browser.compat file that lets SharePoint know, oh, if I come to the site with this particular browser version, then map to a mobile page and render as a mobile device. So if you have a particular device or you want to force all iPhone users into the mobile pages, you could go to the browser.compat file and enter that information there to force them to that page. This is supported in SharePoint Foundation, so that if you're running simple sites with Foundation, you can also render mobile devices. And then the namespace for this is in the WebPart Pages namespace, and it's WebPart Mobile Adapter. So let's take a quick look at how we do this. So here was the page. I had my mobile page, and I have my mobile browser. Now, if we look at this in Visual Studio, what we see here is that I have a simple SharePoint project that's a web part. In this case, the web part has, well, let's take a look at the CS file. So this web part just renders a standard visual web part in SharePoint, right? So the web parts in SharePoint are visual web parts, which means that it has an ASCX web control to it, and it gets rendered here in the web part. So in the ASCX web control, what I have is a simple string that renders the web part. Imagine this is any web part that you would create. Imagine it was a Silverlight control. This is your web part, so this is anything that you want it to be. The trick is now that I want to be able to render this content when the user switches to a mobile version of the page. And the way you do that is you create a mobile web part adapter. So we'll create a class that derives from the web part mobile adapter. And then all I need to do, in essence, is really just implement the create controls for details view. So override that method. And in there, that would be anything that I want to output. Right? This is my output for my mobile device. And so again, if you understand exactly what characteristics you want to output for, you can optimize for many mobile experiences, whether that's optimizing for UI or optimizing for bandwidth. So in this case, what we do here is I create a web part icon, which it becomes the little drop-down arrow that you click to expand that web part. And then I add the title for the web part itself. And then down here, I add a literal control to the controls collection that just outputs this string, this Hello World string. And this is what you saw in this version here. So if we flip back to the site, here's the web part. When I click the little down arrow, it renders that string. So here it's rendering this string here from the mobile adapter. So when I'm not in the mobile adapter, I see the hello from this, which is being generated from my ASCX control here. So when I have a normal web part, I see the normal rendering. And then when I go to the mobile version, I go to the alternate rendering and do the alternate rendering. Now, to edit the browser compat file, you really need to go in there and add basically the mapping from the control that I want to adapt, which is my initial web part, and then my adapter. And I map those two together inside the browser.compat file. Now, what this means is that you can adapt any web part in SharePoint, even if you didn't write it, right? Because all I need to do is come in here and say, hey, if you're on the SharePoint calendar web part, actually render this one when you go to a mobile browser, and it could be your own thing. So you can adapt other people's web parts in order to render something if you want to. So if you run some third-party application and they have web parts, but they don't provide mobile versions of their web parts, you can easily come in here and plug in your own adapters to support that. Now, one of the other things here is I like to try to package everything up when I'm doing development so that I have everything inside a WSP or the SharePoint solution package so that if I hit F5, it will deploy everything that I need to the server. The worst thing, especially for like IT pros, is that you go to your administrator and you say, here's my WSP, oh, and here's a 10-page Word document that tells you how to install it and the things I need to set, right? So you, as a developer, should try to minimize the amount of steps that an administrator would have to do, because that's just error-prone, it's hard to reproduce, you can't do automated builds when you do it that way. So by packaging everything up into a single WSP, then you can do that. Now, one of the problems here, or one of the issues you have to deal with, is the browser compat file is sort of outside the normal SharePoint structure, right? And so how do I write to that file? And so what I've done is I've created a feature receiver so that when the feature installed event happens, it'll actually go out and write the mapping for this web part to the browser compat file automatically. So now I don't have to tell the administrator, oh, and go edit this config file somewhere, and here are the values, and so on and so forth. Was there a question? So here's the event receiver. So this is the event receiver to do the activated here. So all I do first is I get a reference to the web application that this package is being installed into. And once I have the web app, I can go to the IIS settings to get a path to the compat.browser file. Once I have a path to the compat.browser file, I can load that as an XML element. And then I can simply add in a new node called adapter, and then set the two attributes, which are the control type and the adapter type. So the control type being the web part, my normal web part, and the adapter type being the mobile adapter that I'm plugging in and wiring together. And of course, you need to pass the fully qualified names, which is really a challenge. Now, you see here at the top, I have the fully qualified names for those, which are basically the assembly name, the namespace, the version, the key, right? All of that stuff becomes the fully qualified name. Now, Visual Studio will generate this for you, and you could actually put in tokens in this file and get Visual Studio to automatically generate this for you, so that every time you build or you give it to somebody else and they change or rename something, this will automatically generate correctly. One caveat to keep in mind that by default, Visual Studio doesn't do token replacement in .cs files, but it's just a simple... there's a config file. You can put in what types you want to do token replacement in. So if you wanted to, you could go in and add CS or .vb to that, and then it would do token replacement inside of your source code files. So that's helpful for doing this type of scenario here. But where I got this from to make it fairly easy, let's see if I can find it here inside of my package. So inside of my Package Explorer, I can see, here's the under Safe Control, I can see the name of my assembly. Now, one caveat, if you're actually doing this and you go on MSDN and look for the article on how to do this, the article, while it uses Visual Studio, it doesn't actually, it treats Visual Studio as just a standard class library designer, not really taking into account the SharePoint tools that are in there. And so what it'll tell you to do, it'll tell you to do things like, you know, GAC install, write some script to put the assembly in the global assembly cache. It'll tell you to write some script to add the control to the safe controls list. And so the article is actually more complicated than what you really have to do using Visual Studio, because Visual Studio does that stuff for you. So it already adds that this assembly to the safe controls list, so I don't need to bother with it. It already adds it to the global assembly cache, so I don't need to bother with it. The only thing I really need to do is I could come into any web part project, add this one file here, which is my adapter, write the code that goes in my adapter, and then add the event receiver code, and I have a mobile web part adapter up and running. Now, the other nice thing here is that one of the things you should do is if you install it, you should make sure that you uninstall it too. So if someone removes the project, come down here to my deactivated, you should do the reverse step and remove that element. So down here, I basically do a query for the control adapter that I added so that I can remove it. Because if you don't do this, what happens is SharePoint will crash looking for the adapters to adapt, and it won't be there, and you'll get the standard, you know, there was an error, contact your administrator message on the page. So you want to make sure you avoid that, especially on a production site. So make sure you clean up that file as when you put it on as well. One other thing I just want to mention here, you know, because how many people are IT pro here? Couple? Okay. This approach here is okay if you're on a single instance of SharePoint, but if you're on a multi-server farm, there are other techniques for deploying feature receiver type events, And those really occur on timer jobs. So you want to take this exact code, except run it as a timer job on the server, because this has to occur on every web front end in your farm. Doing that through a feature receiver, that won't happen. So just keep that in mind. This works great for development, but if you're in a real production site, you want to make sure you write this same code to a timer event, and that timer event will then fire on every front end server. All right. So kind of what we really came here to talk about was the phone. Now, one of the things that are in the phone 7 is the concept of the hubs, and in particular, the one that we're interested in is the office hub. Now, the office hub has a number of office things. You can view documents, you can see SharePoint, you can run OneNote stuff, right? But this isn't in the emulator. So this is turned off in the emulator, so you won't see this unless you actually have a device. I have a video here that you can see go through to the Office Hub to show you what, kind of what that looks like. So you can open it. You have OneNote capability. You can go into different sections of your OneNote document, and you can see the exact same fidelity that you would see in a normal OneNote application, right? You can come in here, and you can enter notes and record video and record your voice, take voice recordings, and attach that to your OneNote document, and that all of that content will be synchronized with your SharePoint site. So here you can see that you have documents from your SharePoint site, and you can easily click on one of the documents, open that document from the site, and it will cache or download that document depending on if it's changed or not. So here we'll click on the request for proposal. We can choose some of the behaviors of how it caches and how it syncs. But in this case, just open the document. You can see it's very rich fidelity for Word. And then you can add things, you can change the document, you can insert comments. Now, you wouldn't sit here and write War and Peace on the phone, but it's a great device for commenting, reviewing, selecting, editing, making quick changes, right? That's really, I think, the sweet spot for the phone. It's not for sitting down and typing out your doctoral thesis, right? That's not the point of what you would do with this. So you can see that you have fairly rich capabilities with the Office Hub, but none of that is programmable. In this version, you as a developer can't do anything with any of that information. So that means that you have to create applications on your own that basically emulate or go at the same data that those documents are getting or that is in your SharePoint site yourself. And the way you do that is through a couple of different ways. So the phone supports two ways, the first being Silverlight and the second being XNA. So XNA for doing game development and high-end graphics and things like that. And then Silverlight for doing more business kind of applications, right? The simple rear applications that you see on the internet today. So in general, what we'll do is we'll use Silverlight. What's interesting, though, is that you can mix and match these a little bit. From my Silverlight application, I can actually leverage some of the XNA APIs in your application. So, for example, if I want to handle the low-level touch things, I can handle that through some of the XNA APIs. Or if I want to do some more advanced sound capabilities, I can handle that through some of the XNA APIs. But in general, most of the things that you'll write will be in Silverlight for doing SharePoint development. So the phone has a number of common capabilities, and you can think about these features as you think about the type of solutions you want to write against SharePoint. So touch being the big one, right? So how are you going to create a touch-enabled application for SharePoint? Now, granted, probably most of you, if you're like me, as a SharePoint developer, are probably graphically challenged. And so thinking about your experiences on the phone becomes kind of a new learning experience that you need to deal with. So you need to understand what are some of the things, what are around touch, and how do we handle that, and how do we handle the physics, how do we handle the paging and navigation on phones. So these are all new concepts that you need to take into account as a SharePoint developer. We can do things like media capture. We can capture images from the camera. We can capture things from the microphone. Now, the thing about that, though, is a lot of those device, a lot of those capabilities, you don't have direct access to those capabilities, for example. So I'll say to the phone, hey, I need to take a picture. It will launch the phone-taking application and then give me back the image when the user's done taking the picture. So that's good and bad. It's good from the sense that any of the plugins that people write for the photo application side of the phone, I will automatically get in my application. But bad because there are certain scenarios where there are applications that I can't do, right? Augmented reality and things like that, right? So in this version, those things you can't do. So you do have access to a lot of these capabilities of the phone, but you may need to think about them when you're writing your application. Data, so we have access to isolated storage. We have access to link. Now, the phone is a superset of .NET 3, so its core is .NET 3, and it has some extra 4 stuff sprinkled in where they needed it. So that's where we're at on the initial release. I can do WCF, so I can do SOAP and REST calls, which will be key for doing our SharePoint development. It has notification, which is a big one. I'll just mention it here. I haven't created any samples for this yet, but it's next on my list. So the way that you do things in SharePoint is through notifications in terms of getting updates. And the notification service allows you to you register your phone endpoint on the notification server. Then anybody that knows that address can send messages to your phone. So, for example, if you wanted your SharePoint workflow to fire messages to your phone, you would register the phone as an endpoint, pass that URL to SharePoint, and then SharePoint now can call you and ping your phone for various events. And so the experience that the user will have is if they're not in your application, they're in some other application, they'll get the little upside down toast, you know, the toast that pops up from the top, they'll get a notification saying that there's a new task, for example. And now if they click on that, they could be taken to your application and see that task, or they can just ignore it. If you're in your application and you get one of the notifications, your application will receive that as an event that you can handle just like any other normal event in an application. So a couple of different ways. So that's a very powerful feature, and it's a good way that you're going to communicate with your mobile applications. So now let's talk about some of the challenges. So the biggest thing is that the phone, unfortunately, doesn't support Windows authentication or NTLM support in the first version here, which means that for SharePoint, we have to use forms-based authentication only. Good news is that SharePoint supports forms-based authentication fairly easily through the claims capabilities in SharePoint 2010. And what you'll see in this example here is that it is provider neutral. So what I've done is you saw me log in. I have two providers assigned to my site. I have the standard Windows authentication provider, and then I have a forms-based authentication provider. Now, the thing is all of my users are in Active Directory, right? So I don't want to have to set up, for example, a SQL Server database with all my users in there again. So what I did was I added an LDAP provider for my forms-based authentication. So my LDAP provider just looks back into the same Active Directory, and my users have the exact same username and password that they do, whether they're going through Windows authentication or whether they're going through forms-based authentication. Does that make sense? But you do have other options that you can use in terms of the providers that you want to use. So, and this is generally how SharePoint does its authentication. So normally, if you're in 2007 or by default when you set up a new site, you'll get the NT token classic mode, right? So what you need to do is to set this up, you need to turn on claims-based authentication when you're installing your web application. Then you can turn on the FBA, the forms-based authentication, and give it a provider. Now, it's not super easy to do. I know that Ted Patterson is doing a talk on creating alternate providers. So you could create a provider for OAuth or Facebook or OpenID or whatever you want to plug into here as well. And that would allow users on your phone application to log in using those credentials as well. So it's not a bad story. It's not a horrible story that you can't do Windows Auth. It just means you need to think about the problem a little bit differently. Now, the challenge that we have here is that the way forms-based authentication works in SharePoint is that SharePoint will issue a cookie back to you, a token, a security token, a SAML token. The token's name is Federated Auth, or FedAuth is the name of the cookie. So the SharePoint issues you a FedAuth cookie back to your application. In this case, imagine you are a web browser. So in this scenario here, the web browser starts on the left, and it requests something from the SharePoint site. The SharePoint site says, you didn't pass me a Federated Auth cookie. You're not authorized to access this site. I'm going to redirect you to another page. And in this case, the page that it gets redirected to is a login page, which is the one you saw that had the little pull down that I did, right? So once I get redirected to the login page, I can enter my credentials, and then the login page will redirect me to another page. Well, really what happens is the login page behind the scene redirects and calls the authentication.asmx service, which actually will take the username and password and generate you a Federated Auth cookie, and it'll store that Federated Auth cookie into the cookies of the browser, so that when your browser then goes to the next page that it gets redirected back to, which was the page I originally was trying to get to, I do now have that Federated Auth cookie through this series of kind of hops behind the scenes that are happening when you log in. And so I have that cookie, then I can go to any site, and if that application goes to another page, it offers up the same Federated Auth cookie, and so I'm authenticated and I just go about my business doing my SharePoint stuff. So that's in essence what's happening with SharePoint security. Now, the problem that I ran into, it seems easy, right? It's like, oh, I just need to get the Federated Auth cookie. I can watch the traffic in Fiddler. I can see exactly the moment in time that the auth cookie is coming back. I can go and grab that cookie. I could even grab the cookie, cut and paste it into my phone application, and it would then authenticate against SharePoint. So I'm like, that's exactly what I need to do. I need to get that Federated Auth cookie and then put it in my application, and away I go, right? Anybody see any problems with this? So the problem is that the Federated Auth cookie has a flag called HTTP only. The HTTP only flag is a thing that says to web browsers, don't let anybody in code access this cookie. And so good applications like Internet Explorer says, I'm going to honor this cookie because this is a security flag, and I'm not going to let you see this cookie. So if you went into your browser while you're logged on to a Federated Auth site, you won't be able to see the cookie. Also, so I said, well, I can use the HTTP web request and go at it at a low level to get that information. But HTTP web request also honors that flag, so you can't access that cookie from the HTTP web request. So you're back to the square one again, where you need to get that cookie, but you can't get it because it's protected. So how do you deal with this problem? And this is the sort of the conundrum that I struggled with for a while, which is I can't get to the cookie. I can see it, but I can't see it. I can see it in debugging tools, but I can't programmatically get access to the cookie. So the trick here is that I can create a cookie container. And the cookie container is a class in Silverlight that I can attach to a web request. So it's basically setting up a little isolated storage area for my cookies, right? I can attach a cookie container or a cookie jar to the request, and then I can call the authentication.asmx service, and it will fill the cookies as if it was a regular web browser. So I thought, great, this works out really well. Until I went to look at the cookie jar in the debugger, and it was empty. So I'm like, oh, this is no good. How do I get the cookie out of the cookie jar so that I can pass it along? Because again, everything along the way is protecting that flag of HTTP only and honoring that security problem, right? It's kind of like HDMI with your TV. You can't plug in HDMI into a copy machine because it won't have the right encryption. The cookie is sort of the same line. Everything along the chain has to be able to honor that cookie so that you can't get it or do scripting attacks. So then I was sort of stuck again. But the trick here is the third bullet. Even though I couldn't see the cookie, it was actually there in the cookie jar. Even when I looked at it in the debugger, I could not tell that it was in there. So the revelation that I had was that morning was I said, well, maybe if I just pass the cookie jar along and cross my fingers, it'll work. And that's really the trick. So you call the authentication service with the cookie container, and it automatically populates the security tokens inside your cookie container. And then from that point forward, every time you call SharePoint, you just pass along the same cookie jar to every call, which is technically exactly the way the browser does it. Does that make sense? So the next problem I had was the fourth bullet. So I said, great, now that I realized that I can pass this along and this is going to work, I need to be able to call the authentication service to actually log in. So with any good Visual Studio developer and an ASMX file, what I do is I went into Visual Studio, I said, add service reference. Now with Visual Studio and Silverlight, you can't do, like if you're in a WPF application, I can go and add service reference, and then at the bottom I can click the, I'm old school, let me go to the web reference instead, and then that dumps me to the old screen where I can put in an ASMX file, and it generates me this kind of clean ASMX proxy. Silverlight doesn't have that capability. I have to go and add a service reference even though I'm referencing an ASMX file. And then it generates the type like SOAP client, you know, authentication SOAP client is the name of the service, right? That's because I'm generating WCF services, not ASMX services. But the problem here again is that this is the reason the client object model is so good in SharePoint, is that there are services in SharePoint that aren't compatible with Silverlight types. One of the classic ones that I've run into is workflow. If I add a service reference to workflow in SharePoint, I can call the service, but the return value in the workflow isn't compatible with Silverlight, so I can never tell. It crashes with an error. I can never tell whether my workflow kicked off or not, right? There are these type of issues. Well, one of these problems is with the authentication ASMX. It's not compatible with adding a service reference to it. The proxy won't compile. It has a whole bunch of errors. Now, I suppose I could go through and try to fix those up and clean those up in the proxy by hand. But I really opted for another approach. I decided to just go raw and go to the HTTP web request. So I initially call the HTTP web request on the authentication ASMX service using just XML and passing SOAP messages raw to the server. Then I get back my cookie container. Then from there, I can add a service reference to a list, for example, and I can pass the cookie container to that service proxy, and everything from there is exactly the same as you do in SharePoint. And the last one, it's a big one here, that the phone tools are Windows 7 only. So there's an interesting feature if you install the phone tools on server, which is not supported, and it's not supported for a reason, but there's some workarounds to install it. So if you decide that this is what you want to do, and then you start the phone emulator while you have your SharePoint site running in Hyper-V, It has a great feature where as soon as you start the emulator and you click on the emulator, your machine will reboot. So just don't do it. And so what I have here now is I have a Windows Server machine, and I have a Windows Phone developer machine. And so I'm programming against this machine as if it was just a normal server out in the cloud somewhere. And I have a single wire that connects the two machines across the local network. So that's how I do development. So if you're going to be doing phone development with SharePoint, keep that in mind that you may need to have two devices, or what you will need to do is install SharePoint on Windows 7, which is maybe an viable option if you're limited to hardware. So install the SharePoint on Windows 7 and install the phone tools on Windows 7, and you'll be able to go along good. The other feature I have here, so if I have multiple machines, the other kind of problem is how do I network these two machines together, because I'm networking a VHD into an external machine. And so what I have here is I have on the right side, you see my server, and I have the SharePoint VHD running with two network cards. They're all 192.168.150. The internal one is .1, and then I have another network card, which is .5. Then on my Hyper-V server, I have two virtual switches, one internal only, which is .10, and that maps to the .1 device, and that allows me to terminal serve into the machine while I'm doing demos. And then I have a second network device, .20, which is mapped to my physical network card of the machine. That talks across to the physical network card of the other machine, which I've hard-coded the IP address to be .30. Once you do that, you're able to set up the host file on your developer machine so that I can get to sites like phone.contoso.com or internet.contoso.com. It goes through the host file and maps to this machine. Does that make sense? All right. Ready to see how it works? See if it works? So let me log in here on my machine. Okay, so we'll switch over to the second machine. So here I have the phone emulator going. If I look across to my phone site, so this is the phone.contoso.com, which is that VHD that's running on this machine. I can see that I have a task list with a number of tasks in the task list. Now what I did was I wrote an application that will go out and get those tasks from the task list. Checking for it to warm up here. Hopefully it'll connect. And so you can see that it pulled the task from the task list, and I have a master detail representation of the data. And in fact, what's really interesting is this laptop is actually one of the laptops they gave out at PDC. So it's full multi-touch, so I can actually just touch the laptop, and I get full multi-touch into my phone emulator on my laptop here. And so as I go down through and browse for each one, you can see that you have the kind of you have the flicking capability of the phone and all that sort of stuff, right? All right, so let's take a look at how this works. Actually, let's go do this one more time. So if I click it the second time, yeah, see, it's much faster once everything kind of gets warmed up, right? So it's not a horrible experience. It's actually pretty good. So let's go and get back out of this. So here's the application running. You can see my great design capabilities, or if you work at a design firm and you need somebody, let me know. So what I have here is my application. This is just a standard forms application. It standard grid, and then I have the stack panel in the grid, and then I have a list box and a list box template. Over a little bit so you can see some more. So I have a list box template, And I'm doing data binding within the items as well. So I'm binding to the title and the status coming back from the list. And then for the detail view, which is this one down at the bottom, from the detail view, I'm data binding to the currently selected item of the list box. So that gets all data bound as well. So here I do the data context to the selected item of list box one. And then what I do here is I then data bind each element. Here I data bind status. And you can see I bind title and priority, right? So those are the three things you see in the phone. Now what's interesting here is that SharePoint in particular, Visual Studio and Expression Blend support this concept of design time data. So you see in my designer that I have some data in the designer, but where did that come from? Well, where it comes from is the fact that I can set the data context here equal to task collection zero. But you notice in the front it has the lowercase d with a colon. That's the designer namespace. So anything with a d only runs in the designer while you're designing the application. But it allows you to really get a great experience so you can design the application with the right size in mind so everything fits like it should when you actually wire it up to real data. And so I'm running with the D in design mode, and you can see that over here in Expression Blend as well. I can see I have actual data in here. If I look over on my data store here, I can see that I have this design time data set up. And this was really just an XML file that I created. I created an XML file that simulated the structure of my SharePoint data, imported it into Expression Blend, and then Expression Blend created all the plumbing and infrastructure to do that. So for example, it automatically creates this sample data XAML file, which is what's really being pulled against for the data. All right. So once I have that set up in Visual Studio, that's my UI. Now let's go to the actual fun part of the application. Now the first thing I do here is I have to get a hold of my cookie jar. So I create an instance of my cookie jar here. And then I just set the username and password. So you could imagine asking the user for the username and password and then storing that in isolated storage for your application or other ways that you may get the username and password, you could do here. In this case, I just hard-coded it. I also have an event for authenticated that I'm creating. This way that I can go off to the authentication whenever that's done, because everything in Silverlight's asynchronous. Whenever that's done, call me back, and then I'll continue with the rest of the application because I know I have the cookie. So that's why I wait for that event. So let's go down to the authentication piece first. So here's the authentication piece. Now what you can see here is that I'm doing a raw HTTP request to the authentication service, as you can see here on the right. So the first line there, I'm creating a new instance of the authentication service. I create the web request right here. I then attach the cookie jar to the request. Then I set the type of message. In this case, I'm posting a SOAP message to an ASMX service. I set the content type and whether I'm doing a post or a get, in this case a post. Now here I need to actually get the actual SOAP message itself that I'm going to pass. So I do a begin request. You can see the begin request, because again, asynchronous in Silverlight, basically just builds the SOAP message that I'm going to pass to the service. In this case, you can see I stick in the username and password here in this message as well, because those are the two parameters that the login method take. Then I just do a little bit more HTTP web cleanup, encode the message, stick it on the request, and then call the get response. So now I'm actually calling the server now. When the message comes back, all I need to do is I could get the content. So in this most of this code here is really just debugging code for me to look at the message when it comes back. All of this you could get rid of, because once the message comes back and it's okay, I know the cookies are set. So I don't really even need to look at the body of the message at this point. But for debugging, it's helpful. And then I just fire the unauthenticated event so that my application knows that I'm authenticated, I have my cookies, and now I can call any SharePoint services I want to. So once I call my unauthenticated event, all I do there is call my getTasks method. And here I take that exact same cookie jar, because I referenced it as a class level variable, and just stick it on to the next call I'm going to make back to the server, because the jar's already been filled up with the cookies from the authentication request. So now here what I can do is my list service, again, is just a standard service reference, add service reference to my list service.asmx file, right? Standard, out of the box, been there forever in SharePoint since 2007. All of those things just work, right? Again, the only trick is now stick the cookie jar onto that request, and now I can actually call the get list items. Once the get list items come back, I can actually use XML to parse through the result set and populate those here using a link query. So I iterate through all of the rows that are returned back from the get list items, and then I create this new task collection object. In this case, it's just defined here as just a data structure. Once I have that data structure built as an IEnumerable collection, I can just set that as the source for my list box, and then Silverlight and the phone automatically do all the data binding and everything's wired up at that point. So that's all the code. So basically the hard part is just calling the authentication service, getting the cookie jar, and then just remember to pass that along for the rest of the time. All right. Let's look at another sample here. So it's interesting to call web services, but we also have this thing called OData or REST services in SharePoint as well. So I thought, well, it'd be interesting to try to call OData. Now, OData has a number of other issues that are interesting. For one, you can't just simply add a reference to the OData service, like just the same problem I had with my authentication service. So I have to do something else. Well, the OData team had created a OData client library, which is in essence a proxy that's kind of pre-built, but it's only in CTP. And even though we're at RTM now, and we've been for a while, that library is still a CTP library. So as a matter of fact, just today or yesterday, the team finally announced publicly that they do intend to rev that for RTM, and they talked about some of the changes that are going to occur in the way that that library works. And then once you use that library, it gives you kind of the same proxy feel as you would add a service reference. You can just use simple link, and you can, you know, like you would do in a normal Visual Studio application. The problem I have is that currently I can't figure out a way, or I haven't had time to find the way to pass my cookie container to the service proxy for the OData client. So it becomes a problem. But if you have our good friend HTTP web request, you can call anything. So in this case, I'm actually calling the OData list data service using the web request. So the security is all exactly the same. So you simply just take the security code I showed you, just cut and paste it into a new project, and that you're done with that piece. Nothing, you don't even have to change any of the code. It's exactly the same for every project. So once you see this, I'm going to be posting all this code to my blog coming up. So you'll be able to see that. Just cut and paste the code into your own project, and all the security is done for you. Now, what's interesting here is that I'm calling the announcement service. And again, I'm going to put the cookie jar onto the cookie. I'm going to handle the callback. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to iterate through the items and add those to the list. In this case, I iterate through the items and display a message box for each item that comes up. So if I haven't broke this while trying to fix it, let's hit F5 and watch this thing run. It'll fire the emulator. Now what I did in this example was on my authenticated event, I enable the button. So if it takes a long time, the user won't even be able to click on the button until it's authenticated. But again, this is up to your imagination how you want to handle that. So once I click on this, we can see that I hit my first breakpoint. We can step down through our code, load my document. Here's where I can put, so if I look at this now from the response, this is empty, so we have some problems here. So let's see what we get. Let's keep going. So you can see here that it went through and found the first announcement and displayed it as the message box. Click OK. Here's the next message box that fires, which is the second item in the list, and so on. So there were only two in this scenario. So if I go to my announcements list, let me sign in here again. So here's the login page. So if I sign in using forms authentication this time, here's the forms authentication that you saw in that diagram. And so this here, once I log in, will go out and call the authentication service, got the cookie, set it in the browser, and now I'm logged in, right? So that's the login process. So if I add another announcement, we can save this, come back to our phone application. If we come back, my OData tasks, click on our button. There's the first one, the next one, and there's the last one. Cool? Thank you. All right, so I have a couple of other examples that are in progress and working, so I hope to have those in the near future. So just keep an eye out for my blog, and we'll continue this conversation about exploring different areas and different features. Now, the thing is once you build your application, what do you do with it? Well, you'll be able to install your applications up on the marketplace for Silverlight and the phone. So you'll be able to go through, develop your application. You submit it to the marketplace, gets validated, they certify and sign it, and then it becomes available to other users that could then download your application and go against their existing SharePoint sites as well. So the developer tools to get started, go to developers.windowsphone.com and download the tools. The tools in that one download include a Visual Studio Express version of Visual Studio, an Express version of Expression Blend. It includes the emulator. It has samples, guides. It includes the 4.0 version of XNA Game Studio. So if you're aspiring to write Halo, Netherlands version of Halo, then good. So definitely download this. This is where you get started. Also, to get started on the SharePoint side, this is absolutely the fastest way to get started, which is download the VHD. It's the exact same VHD that I'm using here. It has everything fully set up and configured for you. So as a developer, you just turn it on and you're developing everything from SharePoint to FAST to services, Office applications, exchange applications. It's all on there on the VHD. So go here and download the VHD as well. Not to scare you too much at the end, but if you have an existing phone application or you develop a phone application on the emulator and you want to verify or test that it works on a real phone, contact Mateus. He has a bunch of phones that he can either let you borrow or use to install and test your application and get up to speed. So anything to do with phone, definitely contact him. He's the phone expert on this side of the ocean, and so he'll be able to hook you up with whatever you need. And don't be shy. He's actually not a bad guy. So again, thank you very much. This was a huge effort for me to get to this point, and hopefully I've saved you many months of time, and I want to see some really great SharePoint applications coming out of the EU, so I look forward to seeing that. And again, we have about 5 to 6 minutes for questions, so with that, thank you, and please fill out your evals because the feedback is helpful for us. And again, thank you.